This is Perry Marshall, author of 80-20 Sales and Marketing, the definitive guide to working less and making more, and you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, which was named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. My goal for this podcast is to help us both discover new ideas about what's actually working in the quickly changing field of modern marketing and sales. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or some other helpful resource that I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, please feel free to message me on LinkedIn. And if we're not connected there yet, just send me a connection invite. And now, on with the show. Today, we welcome Perry Marshall to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about his book, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, the definitive guide to working less and making more. Entrepreneur Magazine says Perry Marshall is the number one author and world's most quoted consultant on Google advertising. His other books include The Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising and the world's most popular book on Google advertising, The Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords. He's consulted in over 300 industries and is one of the world's most expensive and sought-after marketing consultants. So pay attention, people. And interesting facts, Perry is a drummer and has a degree in electrical engineering. Perry, congratulations on 80-20 Sales and Marketing, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you for having me on the Marketing Book Podcast. And we're going to peel some really interesting layers and tell some crazy stories. And when you leave, if you pay really close attention, I think you'll see the world a completely different way than you do right now. So that means the next 30 or 40 minutes is going to be really important. So thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, that was what the experience I had by reading the book, and it really kind of rewired my marketing brain and had me thinking about some things in a new way. So that I think one part of my brain's a little bit bigger now. But I should mention that Joel Comm has been on this podcast to talk about his book, Twitter Power 3.0, and you were also a guest on his internet reality-based TV show, The Next Internet Millionaire, which is based on The Apprentice.
That's true. Yeah, that was an interesting experience. Yeah, it was like, you know, a junior version of The Apprentice with all these guys. In fact, he had me teaching an 80-20 segment on his show. And
episode 11, as I recall.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. So, you know, that's a funny thing to bring up. So yeah, I have this little plexiglass thing in my office that says you were a guest on The Next Internet Millionaire.
Well, hang on to that. So
yeah, I'm gonna sell it on eBay for $100,000.
There you go. Yeah, it's got you and Joel Comm involved in it. So, you know, on this podcast, we love talking about books, and I've talked at certain points about the transformative power of a single book. And for me, there's two in my career. Can you talk about your experience that way? And you talk about the 80-20 principle by Richard Koch. Why is that the most pivotal business book you ever picked up?
Well, so I thought that I understood 80-20 a long time ago, because I knew that 20% of the people have 80% of the wealth and 80% of people have 20% of the wealth. And then later I read in some sales book that 20% of the customers generate 80% of the sales and the other 80% only generate 20. And so like, well, that's cool. That's nice. I even checked and it was true, mm-hmm. But I hadn't really think any further about that. Well, so one of my colleagues said, you absolutely have to read this book, The 80-20 Principle. And I read it and I got to page 14 in Richard's book. And he said, he made this almost throwaway comment. He said, 80-20 has a lot to do with fractals and chaos theory. And then he just kind of goes on. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I actually know a thing or two about that.
He had you at fractals.
Yeah. And okay. And so let's just make a confession that this is not like what most people are normally thinking about or into. And most people might not even know what a fractal is, but here's what it is. It's the idea that whether it's a crack in your windshield or the San Andreas fault, you know, that might be 1,000 miles long, that the process of creating a crack is the same. Okay. Whether it's micro or macro, that fractal patterns are like you look at a tree and you see that branching pattern, but you can zoom in and zoom in and zoom in and zoom in. And every time you zoom, there's more branches. And every time you zoom, there's more branches. And you can get all the way down to a leaf with the veins that feed the cells. And it's the branching, right? So there could be 10 different scales of branching going on in a tree. That's fractal. Well, when he said that, I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I might know what that means. I think that means that there's an 80-20 inside every 80-20. Mm-hmm. And then another one, and then another one. I think that's what that means. And he goes, I said to myself, I think this also means that this is absolutely everywhere, and it's a law of nature. It's not just this little thing about economics or real estate or sales figures or something. And it was all true. Okay. And nobody had ever explained this to regular people anywhere. I mean, it was, I could find traces of it in a few old scientific papers and stuff, but like nothing that any mainstream people were ever picking up. And so I started looking at this. And in fact, I ended up like creating a piece of software to help people work with it, which is included with the book. So here's what this actually means. So what it actually means is that it's not just these certain weird things like real estate or economics, they're 80-20. It's pretty much everything that cause and effect are inherently unequal. That they're, so 80-20 is the most basic law of cause and effect. Now, I don't know how you could get more basic than cause and effect. And I don't know how you could have a bigger hole in your knowledge of the world if nobody's explained to you that all cause and effect is 80-20. So let me explain what I mean, okay? And then I'll tell you some stories and tell you how to use this. Okay, so 80-20 says that 80% of the traffic on your carpet and the dirt on your carpet is on 20% of the carpet. It says that 80% of the cars drive on 20% of the roads. It means 80% of the hard drive space is taken up by 20% of the files. It means 20% of the salespeople make 80% of the sales. It means 20% of the restaurant franchises charge 80% of the franchise fees. It goes on and on and on. It's size of sand in a bucket. It's the size of craters on the moon. It's everywhere. Okay. Mm-hmm. But most people have never noticed this. In fact, most people are trained to suppress it. Okay. But not only is 80-20 true everywhere, there's 80-20 squared and there's 80-20 cubed. So if 20% of your customers generate 80% of your sales, also 20% of the 20% generate 80% of the 80%. So that means 4% of the customers are 64% of the sales. But you can do it again, and that will tell you that 1% of the customers generate 50% of the sales. Mm-hmm. Well, if there was ever a lever in business that would get you to the action faster, this is the lever. And once you start seeing this, you will see this everywhere. So like if you read the Amazon reviews of 80-20 sales and marketing, about every fifth person will say, oh my word, this is everywhere. I never had any idea how deep this goes. My goodness, you know, like I'm talking to my wife about it. I'm talking to my friends about it. Like they think I'm crazy, you know. And like if they really understood the book, then that's the reaction. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my word, how come I never saw this before? This should have been so obvious.
Yes, yes. That was the case for me as well. So just to go back, a fractal is it's a repeating pattern where the smallest parts resemble the whole, just as you continue down, getting smaller and smaller. And what was interesting is you said 80-20 is the most important math you can know in business. And it's the most universal pattern in your life that no one ever pointed out until now. And it's not just a business rule of thumb. It's a law of nature. So
yes,
you said that your job is as a marketer, salesperson, business person, your job is to climb the power curve from wherever you are right now. And then you go on to say moving time and energy from left to the right. So can you walk the listener through as best you can what you mean there?
Yeah. So if you put 80-20 on a graph, it looks like a ramp that is level on the left side and then shoots up into outer space on the right side. Like it just goes up and up and up on the right side. Okay. So let me give you an example of like just a very practical example of how this works. So I bet everybody who ever went to school, you know, everybody took a test. They took a history test and the average was 76. And then the teacher drew a little bell curve on the board and said, okay, so if you got a 76, that's a C+. And then these people got Bs and these people got B pluses. And right. We've all seen that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what they're focusing on is the average score in the class, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's one way of looking at all the people that took those tests. But now we're going to plot it on an 80-20 curve, and an 80-20 curve works like this. We're going to take the best people in the class, and we're going to put them on the right side, and then we're going to trail down to the worst people on the left side. And what we're going to graph is their history ability. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Their history potential. And we could do this in anything. Okay, we could do this in science. We could do this in number of shoes. We could do it in number of domain names. We could do it in number of watches. We could do it in how much real estate you own. You could do it in how much you spend on your cars. You could pick just about anything. And what you will get is you will get that most people are just kind of marginally involved, or, you know, they're just sort of okay at history. They're not really very good. But then as you move towards the most passionate, best person, it goes up into the stratosphere. If we're actually measuring how good they are at history, or how good they are at science, or how much they know about it, or how much they can actually get done, or how much money they make, or how much money they spend, it goes up exponentially. Okay. And so 5% of the people spend, you know, 2/3 of the money, and 1% of the people spend half the money, and 0.1% of the people spends like 10% of the money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you like that, there's one kid in that history class who will do more history stuff in his life than all of the other ones combined. And that's the one you want. That's the one you're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the bell curve tells you what score had the most people. Okay. 9 people got a 76. Who cares? They're not going to be historians. They're not going to be a college professor. You know, one of them's going to work at Jiffy Lube, and one of them's going to, you know, sell flowers, and like, they're not going to do that. But one of those kids is like going to be a Nobel Prize winner. And you want to know who that is. So like, I do this exercise when I speak to live audiences. Like, so I spoke at the Entrepreneur Magazine conference a while back. And I said, okay, everybody who owns shoes, stand up. Right. So everybody stood up.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, if you own less than 5 pair of shoes, sit down. And then, you know, less than 10 pair of shoes, sit down. Less than 20, sit down. 40, 80, 160.
And most of the room is sitting down by then, right?
Well, most of the room is. Yeah. But you know what's funny? Mm-hmm. I got up to 640 shoes and I had 2 women still standing.
Was one of them named Imelda Marcos?
Well, almost, right? Well, so one woman had like 650 pair of shoes, and the next woman had 800, right?
Okay.
Okay. And I said, look, 20% of the women own 80% of the shoes. Hello. And then I did domain names. There was one guy that owned 5 million domain names. There's another guy that owned 10 million.
Most people had maybe one or two.
Those two guys own more domain names than everybody else in the whole audience put together. Mm-hmm. This is how 80-20 is. This is how the whole world is. It's extremely unequal.
So the lesson there then is that you don't be trying to sell to everyone. Be more like a heat-seeking missile, trying to find the ones that are going to be your biggest buyers.
Yeah, if you have to sell 50 pairs of shoes today, you know, the average salesperson is going to talk to every one of those 300 people in the audience. You want to buy a pair of shoes? You want to buy a pair of shoes? No. Like, you do what I did. They're like, you know, I could sell 50 pair of shoes to those three people over there, and I only have to talk to three people. I don't have to talk to 300.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everything in the world is like this. And most people, they've never thought about it. They've like, sure, they know some people make more money than other people. They know some people, they don't know it's exponential.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that 1/10 of the people spend 10 times the money.
Right. So a lot of the book is, you know, trying to help people understand, at least largely with internet marketing, how to direct that heat-seeking missile so that you are constantly optimizing and improving to get to that 20%.
Yeah, that's right. But then it also applies to a lot of other stuff. It applies to your time.
Right. And you even talk about charity, like Bill Gates. He wants to invest money where it's going to have the greatest impact.
That's right. So there's nothing worse than a charity that doesn't practice 80-20, mm-hmm. right?
Especially if you're giving to them.
Right. So if you're giving a charity money, they should be taking 50% of their resources and devoting it to 1% of what they do or who they do it for, because it will generate far more results than all the rest of it, right?
Right.
And so, you know, some people are much more worth investing in. Some of your talents will generate way more return on an education dollar than some of your other talents.
Mm-hmm.
And so what education trains people to do is treat everything equal. So I'm supposed to get an A in English and an A in history and an A in social studies and an A in math and an A in science. 80-20 says, get an A in 20% of your classes, and what you get in 80% of your classes doesn't matter, because you're not going to do that, or you're not going to use that, or you don't care about that. And in fact, what you should do is pour all your effort into being kind of like the idiot savant who is super, super, super knowledgeable about this one thing, because if you want a job or if you want to build a business, you only need to know that one thing. You don't need to know social studies. And look, I'm not against being, you know, good at stuff or anything like that. I'm just saying, where are you going to pour most of your time and most of your passion?
Right.
You need to pour it in these small areas.
Yeah. And towards the end of the book, you talked about don't fall in love with bright, shiny objects. Fall in love with mastery. But
yes.
So when Richard Koch started talking about fractals, he had you at fractals. Perry Marshall, when you started talking about shotguns, you had me at shotguns. So let's let's talk about John Paul Mendoza, who comes up several times in the book. He's quite a character. I've actually spoken to him on the phone a year or so ago. Explain what racking the shotgun is and how that applies to everything else that follows in the book.
So this is my friend John. We've been buddies for a long time. And he's been a mentor to me, and he's a little older than I am. John dropped out of high school at age 17 in Denver. He hitchhiked to Las Vegas, and he became a professional gambler with a fake ID and everything, okay? And like, his mother's like going to mass and lighting candles every morning, scared to death, you know, what has happened to my son, right? Mm-hmm. So John is like living by his wits in Vegas. And after about 3 weeks of this, he's like, this is harder than I thought it was going to be. And he runs into this guy named Rob, and Rob runs a professional gambling ring. And they get to talking, and John says, hey, do you think you could teach me how to be better at poker? And Rob says, for a percentage of your winnings, I could teach you how to be better at poker.
Of course.
And John's like, oh, that might actually be a good deal. So they shake on it. And as soon as they shake on it, Rob says, jump in the Jeep, John. We're going for a ride. So they're in the Jeep. And John says, going down the highway. John says, so how do I win more poker games? And he says, the way you win more poker games is you have to find people who are going to lose. And those people are called marks. So like, this is the kid who just got here from Wichita, and he's got his grandmother's inheritance money, and he arrived and lost wages, and he's going to lose his wages. And that's the kid you want. And John says, okay, so where do I find that guy? And he goes, here, I'll show you. And he pulls into a strip club parking lot.
Okay. Cause I want to make sure I knew this was a strip club they were going to.
This, it was
very important. So, you know,
We're PG-13 here, okay?
Yeah, it gets better.
And and so they go in there, and there's scantily clad women, and there's loud music, and there's people drinking, and to all this noise. It's loud in there. And Rob sits John down at this table, and he pulls a sawed-off shotgun out of his jacket, which he carried everywhere he went, and he opens the chamber. And then he slams it shut. So it goes in the middle of this noisy club. And a few people look around like, hey, what was that? And the owner comes over and says, hey, is everything all right over here? Everything's just fine. Just teaching the lad a lesson. Don't worry about us. John, did you see those people who turned around when they heard that noise? And John's like, yeah, some really scary people turned around when they heard that noise. And he says, those people are not marks. Don't play poker with them. Play poker with everybody else. Okay. That was John's first lesson in 80/20. And we call it racking the shotgun. And it's always going on all around you all the time. You just have to pay attention. Now notice that guy didn't have to spend a dime to figure out who was a mark and who wasn't in a loud, noisy, full of distractions strip club.
Okay.
Some people, despite the distractions, heard that noise and their amygdala said, hey, that's a very dangerous sound. You better stop looking at whatever you're looking at and pay attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've been on a keyword on Google AdWords. Some people search for that keyword. Some people don't. That's racking the shotgun. Some people see your ad. Some people don't. That's racking the shotgun. Some people click on your ad. That's racking the shotgun. Some people fill in their form on your website. That's racking the shotgun. Some people open your email. Some people click on your email. Some people attend your webinar. Some people buy your stuff. Some people buy some more stuff. Some people make a donation. It's all racking the shotgun, and it's all 80/20. Not that it's all 80 or 20. That's not the point. The point is that there's a large minority that doesn't do much of anything, and there's large majority doesn't much of anything. Small minority amounts to almost everything. And then there's a minority of the minority that does almost everything of the almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're dealing with small numbers. It's like most people don't realize, for example, most political parties, most movements, most anything is started by less than a dozen people who generated more than 50% of the influence of whatever it is. So you name it. It could be the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the pro-choice, the pro-life, the this, the that, the gun control, the anti-gun control, all of that. They're all run by a very small number of people. Mm-hmm. Big purchasing decisions at Walmart or big corporations, small number of people. Huge, right. Huge doors swung by tiny hinges.
And there's your leverage. So in the book, you explain that sales is first and foremost a disqualification process, not a convincing people process. So let's continue with the racking the shotgun. And can we talk a little bit back to John Paul about some of the disqualifiers that you can use in sales, but also bake into your internet marketing?
Yes. So this will completely liberate you because it will relieve you from having to convince and beg people. Okay, so 80-20 says that sales and marketing is not a convincing and persuading process. It's a disqualification process. So John worked Las Vegas doing gambling and organized crime and all kinds of crazy stuff for about 3 years. And one day he's sitting in a restaurant booth and these two guys are having an argument. Yes, you will. No, I won't. Yes, you will. No, I won't. Out comes a Glock and it gets planted on the other guy's skull. And he says, yes, you will. And John sat there and he goes, you know, I think I'm done with this.
Yes, his mother's prayers were being answered.
That's right. Baby Jesus was smiling on John that day. Mm-hmm. So John left and he went and he got a job in Southern California selling some kind of defense electronics. And some guy puts 206 sales leads on his desk and says, here, go meet with all these people and sell them the stuff. Now, John had 3.5 years of street smarts in Vegas and all kinds of stuff. And he, like, I don't know if John knew 80-20 or not, but he sure knew how it worked. And he was like, there is no way 206 people out of 206 are worth talking to. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's no way. And so he came up with this list of five powers as qualifiers. And these are profound because these are the five things that are always true anytime anybody sells anything to anybody. And here's what they are. Number one, they have the money. If they don't have the money, they are not buying the stuff.
Not everyone is a good prospect.
Oh my goodness. Well, it took me years to figure this out. I mean, it's so bloody obvious, but yeah. I mean, seriously, how many hours I spent, you know, going back to some customer, they didn't have the budget. They didn't have anything. Yes. Okay. I thought Kumbaya was going to make a purchase order appear. Like, anyway, okay, they have the money. Number two, they have a bleeding neck. You know, if you go to the emergency room with a broken arm, it's not an emergency. Okay. If you go to the emergency room with blood squirting out of your aorta, that's an emergency. Right.
Yeah. This interview is taking on a very colorful, kind of violent nature, but you know, please keep going. No, it's so true though. Do they have
a kid?
That's right. You're a pastor's son.
I'm a pastor's kid.
And you're a well-behaved pastor's son, I should add.
And when the editor of my 80-20 book, like, got a hold of the manuscript, and I've got like Glocks and racking the shotgun and strip clubs and all this stuff, she's like this granola crunching woman from the East Coast. She was horrified. She's like, you've got to get rid of this bleeding neck stuff. And I'm like, woman, I've been teaching this stuff for like 10 years already. And like, this is the stuff that everybody likes. So we
but
are not
it's changing. So true though. It's just a much more colorful way to talk about pain. You know, you talk about any kind of sales training program. Do they have pain? Do they have pain? Well, from now on, I'm going to be talking about bleeding necks. Do they have a bleeding neck?
In fact,
or can you find the bleeding neck if they didn't know it was bleeding?
I don't know how often I am talking to people and I go, dang, I wish they knew what racking the shotgun means. Dang, I wish they knew what a bleeding neck is. Like, I would have to explain it. Like, in my customers, Planet Perry, everybody knows what that means. Right?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So somebody's like, well, I got to figure out who's going to, and somebody in the room will say, well, how are you going to rack the shotgun? And they're like, oh, I know what to do. Like, you know, just get somebody to turn their head, raise their hand, whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So number three, they have to buy into your unique selling proposition.
Yes.
Like not the other guy's USP, like your USP, which means you have to have one. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number four, they have to have the ability to say yes. This is huge.
Yeah. A lot of people sell to people that can only say no.
Right. And again, this is me, like kumbaya, my Lord. Like, I just thought like that if I sweet talked them long enough that somehow they would magically become the person who could say yes. Like, no, there's all kinds of people. They can stop you, but they can't give you a green light. They mm-hmm. can't write the check. It's their boss. It's the engineering manager. It's the purchasing agent. It's their wife. It's their mother, right?
Right.
And number five, it has to fit into their overall plans. Now, if you take these five things and you apply them to every single person you talk to, like, okay, do they have the money? Well, that eliminates like a whole bunch of people, right? Yeah. Do they have a bleeding neck? No, actually they don't. They're sipping iced tea on their patio and they're perfectly comfortable.
Or kicking tires. Yeah, everything's fine. I'm just bored. I thought I'd ask you about your products or services.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, I thought people would buy stuff because they thought it was intellectually interesting because I'm kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Like, no, they're going to buy it because blood is squirting out of their aorta. Right.
Like, figuratively speaking here, folks. Yeah. Don't drive off the road.
Figuratively speaking. Right. But no, they're in pain. People spend money when they're in pain. Yeah. Right. So I try to sell all this prevention. No, sell cure. Right. People need cure, they're in pain, they spend money. It's 16 times easier to sell cure than it is to sell prevention. I know, I believe in prevention. I do. Mm-hmm. Kumbaya. I take my vitamins every day. But you want some money? Go get a guy that's got a heart attack. He'll write you a big check.
Yeah. And you also said all good sales copy, of course, is about your customer, not you. And good copy speaks to the bleeding neck first. And you actually had a background in manufacturing. I had another guest on the show, Bruce McDuffie, author of The New Way of Marketing for Manufacturers. And he talks about, it's all about them. All they want to talk about is their product. And I was just wondering if that was a big frustration for you when you were working for a manufacturer.
Well, not only did they just want to talk about their products, I just wanted to talk about my product, you know, like, and so... Like you really have to, so like I was a manufacturer selling to manufacturers, and what always made it sell was talking to them about their products. So like, for example, when I was selling these networking industrial circuit boards that get embedded in electronic devices, I found out the person to sell was actually the product marketing manager because he was the guy who had to sell the thing. And I'd be like, well, if you have my networking board, then a guy with a network can buy your product. And if you don't have my little board, he can't buy it. And he's like, oh, I got a bunch of those guys. I'm like, okay, so buy my board. And he would ram it down the engineering manager's throat. The engineering manager would go, hey, wait a minute. Those are $200. We could make them for $35. And the marketing manager would go, yeah, you could make them in $35 a year and a half from now. But you don't have them now and you don't have time to go do that. So you're going to put a little connector on the side of this thing and we're going to plug in this guy's board and we're going to pay $200 for it. And you're going to ship this thing out the door. Okay. Right. And like, this was how I sold my circuit boards. It was all about their product. It wasn't about me at all.
Mm-hmm. But that might've been why you were successful doing it because most of them want to talk about themselves. But Per, let's move on to, let me ask you about the power triangle. And can you explain why the primary skill that you need to master in marketing is thinking backward?
So all sales and marketing comes down to, it's a triangle with three edges and then 80-20 in the center, all right? And here's the three edges. It's traffic, conversion, and economics. Those are the three ingredients of all marketing. You have to get traffic, whether it's on the web or foot traffic in a store or restaurant. You have to get people to show up, okay? Then you have to convert the traffic by saying something that they want to hear or showing them something they want to see. Okay. And then you have to have the economics of traffic, which is when they write you the check, it has to be a big enough check to pay your bills and everything else and have something left over that you can advertise with so you can do it again. So traffic, conversion, economics, cha-ching, traffic, conversion, economics, cha-ching, traffic, and you just keep it going around. And when you make that circle happen, your business grows bigger and bigger and bigger every time the circle makes a rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, so like this is how all of it works. And if you want to fix a bottleneck, you just find the choke point in those three steps and you start fixing it. Now, that happens forwards, traffic, conversion, economics.
Mm-hmm.
The way when you're building a product and you want to sell a product and you want to find people to buy the product, you have to work backwards. You have to start with economics. Okay, how much do we have to sell this thing for, right? And how valuable does it have to be to for somebody to write us that check? Then you have to go to conversion. You go, okay, then what would we say in order to get the person to write the check? And then you have to go get the people to say it too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have to go backwards. Economics, conversion, traffic. Economics, conversion, traffic. So the marketer, in order to build the business, has to think backwards. But in order to visualize how the customer's experience, he's got to go forwards. And so you have to go both directions. Now we put, so we draw this in a little triangle, and then we put a triangle inside the triangle, and we put 80-20 right in the middle. And what that signifies is that at every step of the way, you're always looking for the levers. You can never afford to push the wrong side of the lever. You'll always go broke pushing the wrong side of the lever. You'll always get some kind of result pushing the correct side of the lever. And so it's finding the levers in the traffic, the 20% of the traffic that generates 80% of the sales.
Mm-hmm.
It's the levers in the conversion. It's the 20% of what you could say that generates 80% of what people actually buy. Mm-hmm. And the 80%, the 20% of the economics that produces 80% of the money is there's a minority of products, there's a minority of customers, there's a minority of salespeople or whatever that actually makes the thing happen. And you take resources away from the ineffective stuff and you put it into the levers.
And do more of what's working and less of what's not working, but look for that 20% through all three of those sections.
That's
so,
right.
Perry... One last thing I wanted to ask you about was about understanding the customer. It was a concept I'd never seen before. And you said that one of the cardinal rules of marketing is never go into a market unless you can write a page of your customer's diary and be so spooky accurate that they wonder, hey, were you spying on me last night? What do Yes. you mean by their diary?
So I mean... Ideally, we're talking, so you ever read a Stephen King novel, you know, and you're all creeped out because, you know, the sink is dripping water and it's going drip, 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 you know, and the mm-hmm. monster's around the corner or whatever, you know, and it's like, it's that spooky. Okay, so the way that you sell to anybody is you describe their worries, their anxieties, their pain, their bleeding neck, their squirting aorta, their ulcer in excruciating exact detail.
Right.
Okay.
Find their sore spot and bang it with a hammer.
Right. And not only bang it with a hammer, but even like, you know, slowly and methodically just rub salt in it.
Right.
Okay.
But to keep with our violent undertone here,
round.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Now, look, here's what I found is just about any time that I went into a market where I understood them so well that I could describe their life and their pain with Stephen King-like accuracy, it worked. Okay.
Yep.
And just about every time I couldn't, it failed. Okay. And here's how it is for me. I can't do that unless I've been that person.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much all my life, everything I've successfully sold, I had already been the person I was selling to.
Mm-hmm.
One time I did this product called Look Over Perry's Shoulder, which you can buy on our website. And the premise was my staff is going to go find a few customers. Perry's going to come on the webinar. He doesn't know anything about them. And he has to start cold. And by the time he's done, he has to write them an email that's going to sell something.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first guy that comes on is selling some kind of a program to insurance agents, I believe. Okay.
Right.
And so he'd figured something out in the insurance business. And so I ask him all these questions and, you know, we get all these facts out on the table and everything. And I go, okay, so how did you know when you actually had something that finally worked? And he said something like, well, I came home with the first decent sized check that I'd ever had in the history of my insurance business, you know, and I plunked it down and my wife looked at it. Okay. So I decided, okay, so I'm going to write that. I'm writing it as though it's him. Okay. And I say, so I came home and my wife was in the kitchen and I handed her this check. And it was for $5,000. It was the biggest check we'd gotten in 18 months. And she smiled at me for the first time in probably months.
Yes.
And so I'm typing that. He choked up.
Bravo.
Now, I've lived this. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Like,
oh, you talk in your book about all the ups and downs you've had.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Like babies born stuff, and yeah.
The stuff my wife's put up with. Oh my goodness. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's nothing a man wants more than his wife to smile at him. Like, wow. You know, hey, Beauty and the Beast, you know, you're finally not a dumb, ugly ass anymore. Like, I'm actually glad I hooked up with you.
I can dream. Yeah. Yes, Perry, as a matter of fact, today I wrote a check to my wife so she could go buy another horse, and I'm just thinking, that's all I wanted is what you right. just described. So
right. You could call this sexist if you want, but all men want to do is just please their woman.
Yeah,
you know, they just want to make her happy, make her proud of them. Like, so when I wrote, you know, she was actually proud of me, like, man, like, now is that going to get people to respond to his innovation that he cooked up for insurance guys?
Yeah, more than if he talked about the product.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you know, we have this AAA rated JD Power. Oh, brother.
Like, yeah.
Who cares?
You know, so I've had on the show, you're in Chicago. I've had another famous resident of Chicago, Dr. Philip Kotler, and even 50 years ago, just like you are here, he's talking about the more you understand your customer, the more successful you're going to be. And yet that seems to be the hardest part. So if people can take from this the idea of you've stolen a page out of their diary about their deepest fears and, you know, their dreams and their latent anxieties, the more you talk to those, the more successful you're going to be. So, Perry Marshall, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
I would actually hope they realize that 80-20 applies to their time, and time is exponential. And some things you do are worth $10 an hour. Some things are worth $100 an hour. Some things are worth $1,000 an hour. And some things are worth $10,000 an hour. And you have little blips of $10,000 an hour time every single day. But if you don't notice them, you don't know what to amplify and what to get rid of.
Yep.
Like, time is all we got, man.
And in the bonus section that you go to after you get the book, you go to this website that you've set up, you can print out these different columns of the $10 an hour things and the $10,000 an hour things. Thank you for putting it in there. It's already been printed out it's taped up here in my office. It's just a great reminder. Yeah, this is yet another one of those books where we just didn't do justice. We've really only scratched the surface. So, Perry, what books, I guess besides Koch's book on 80-20, what books have inspired your work and career?
Well, you know, there's another book by Richard. I think Richard is one of the most underrated business authors. You ever have those arguments with, like, who's the most underrated guitarist?
Or, oh, yeah.
You know,
or drummer.
Right. Or drummer, right? Well, Richard is one of the underrated business authors because, yes, 80-20 Principles sold like a million copies. But he's got this other book that I think is an absolute gem. It's called The Star Principle. And it applies 80-20 to which markets do you go in, which businesses do you go in, and which ones do you say no to. Now, what a lot of people don't know is that Richard, in less than 30 years, has gone from working stiff to he's now worth $500 million. Okay. If you do the math on that, his investment skill rivals Warren Buffett, right. And he's 20 years younger than Buffett.
I think there's some proof in that pudding there.
Yeah. And the Star Principle is how he picks winners. Now, he's an equity investor, and it applies to how you invest in companies, but it applies equally to investing time in a company that you're not investing money into, namely your own, or time and money, or which job should you pick? Like, even Star Principle would apply to, you're a college grad, you're actually going to get a job, you're not going to start a business, but which company should you go get a job at? You should get a job at a company that's going to grow. And this is a formula for figuring out what's going to grow. And it's called the Star Principle. And that's been one of the most influential books for me. And it fits hand in glove with 80-20 sales and marketing and all the 80-20 stuff, because it's from an 80-20 grandmaster black belt.
Oh, wow. That's great. I'm definitely gonna have to check that one out. Are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or heard of that you look forward to seeing?
Well, can I go retro on this question?
Go any way you like.
You know,
and it doesn't have to be business books either.
Well, that's great. So I've been preaching to my audience for quite some time that you should read something written before Gutenberg every day. Now, why would I say that? Well, we live in the age where, you know, you can tweet like, hey, look at the picture of the sushi that I just had for lunch. And there's all this noise. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So contrast this with, if it was written before Gutenberg, it was laboriously hand-copied on scrolls by scribes hidden in urns inside of caves so that when Alexandria burns down that we won't lose it forever, okay?
Yeah.
So anything that was written before Gutenberg is pure gold. And if there was ever an antidote to the shallow thinking, if you read the Old Testament, the New Testament, Marcus Aurelius, Plato, Aristotle, you know, Paradise Lost, Shakespeare, you know, even stuff maybe a little bit after Gutenberg, but like the really old stuff, there is such a clarity of thinking in that old literature. It's way better than most modern books by a country mile, but you kind of have to get your brain running at a different speed in order to get into it, because it's not written to tickle your lizard brain, but it survived centuries.
Yes.
Of centuries burning down. So that's actually my best reading tip right
that
there.
That is a great bit of advice. And you know, what makes me think of is Ryan Holiday, who's also been on the podcast here. He has written a book called The Daily Stoic, and he is he talks quite a bit about the Stoics and the philosophers and all of them, and there's a resurgence in the interest of that, and I'm thinking that fits hand in glove with what you're talking about. Something.
It's a reaction to the shallowness, the social media, the echo chambers. Trust me, man, if you're reading Solomon, you're not in an echo chamber.
Right. And that's what we need. Producing it back then really was a big deal. It was
a very big deal.
Firing off a blog post.
Getting a publisher in 2500 BC was really hard.
Right. And to have those things still survive, even after the fire at the library in Alexandria so many years ago.
That's right.
So how best can listeners learn more about you and your book and Planet Perry.
Go to perrymarshall.com/8020. You can get 8020 sales and marketing for $7 in the U.S., including shipping, or $14 outside of the U.S. It's cheaper than Amazon. You get extra stuff with it, and you can watch how we sell. That's at perrymarshall.com/8020. It'll change your life. It's also on Audible if you're into that.
Terrific. The name of the book is 80/20 Sales and Marketing, The Definitive Guide to Working Less and Making More. The author is Perry Marshall. Perry, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you for having me, and a great question, great conversation, great preparation. I appreciate you very much. Thank you.
And that closes the book on episode 158 of the Marketing Book Podcast. For more, check out this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if I can recommend a specific book or other helpful resource for whatever situation you find yourself in, please feel free to message me on LinkedIn. And if we're not yet connected on LinkedIn, just send me an invite. My name again is Douglas Burdett. Hey, do you know what a great conversation starter is? Ask your friends and colleagues and clients what podcast they listen to. And if you think they might like the Marketing Book Podcast, please mention it. And please join us next time as we welcome Debbie Gagish to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about her book, Rise of the Revenue Marketer. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.